Ladies and gentlemen, once again, back is the incredible Beef, Wine, and Shenanigans. Indelibly, here we are, Denise Tapscott, Kirk Johnson, Mark Abbott, and myself,
Stephen Van Patten. How you doing?
All right. Look, we are just coming off our Sharon Smith Lentz interview. Mm-hmm. Where we were on our best behavior.
Yes.
So expect this episode to be not so much of our best behavior.
Way more shenanigans.
Right. Yes. We will be on some full blown bullshit, I think, tonight. and we're going to start with, of all things, well, real quick. Oh yeah, before we turn it completely loose, I do want to give a quick rest in peace to an Alphabet City icon, Big Lee, who was the owner of the Hard Swallow down in Alphabet City. I had the privilege of being at his funeral and repast last week. And it was as heavy metal as heavy metal can be. He was a black man, owned a heavy metal bar. He was the type of cat that wore similar jewelry to myself. He was local rock and roll, man. And it was wild because his funeral involved people taking shots while eulogized him.
Oh
yeah,
that's very cool.
Very, very cool. So shout out to him. Big loss. Our sympathies go out to his widow, Sasha, and so on. Another rest in peace, Sinead O'Connor. Who all I'm going to say is a little ahead of the rest of us. As far as certain things about the Catholic Church.
Yep.
And I believe what so Mark, you were telling us before we started the show that Morrissey had a little something to say about everybody that's been kind of shouting her out lately and everything like that. And what was that?
He basically was saying that he was calling bullshit. Oof. And he was saying that, you know, if people, when she was here, had stood up for her the way they're all eulogizing her now, you know, she would probably still be with us. But, you know, the same people that condemned her are now the same people that are turning around and saying all these wonderful things and how strong of a woman she was and how outspoken she was. And I mean, she really took a lot of crap.
I mean, the thing is, you gotta be a strong woman when you're completely abandoned by society.
I mean, I remember when she, what was it, right after the tearing up of the Pope,
Saturday Night Live,
they booed her at this concert the following week, and Kris Kristofferson came out and stood up for her.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
And I mean, you know, she was and hip hop embraced her. Mm-hmm. I remember when she had the Public Enemy logo cut into the side of her head.
Oh yeah.
And she did, I think she did a song with MC Light at one point. Mm-hmm. So she definitely was a woman ahead of everyone else.
Yeah.
And
brave.
And extremely brave. I mean, you can't, I mean, that it's funny how fickle things are in hindsight. It's just everybody's screaming, you know, we need to stand up. We need to talk about this. We need to say till somebody does.
Mm-hmm.
Then all of a sudden it's, I don't
know.
How
dare you? How dare you?
You know, also,
like, I meant to talk about it, but career. Not like that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, strong woman.
Yeah.
Beautiful musician.
Yeah, her version of Nothing Compares to You is actually a great song. Like,
yeah, it is. Oh, girl. It really is.
Song. Man. Prince, and Prince is the one who wrote it. His version's great too.
Yep.
But,
yeah.
Nothing compares to hers.
Nothing compares to hers.
Nothing compares to hers.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
Nothing compares.
Yeah. So what else we got? We got some. Well, before we get into Netflix, because you got a little fuzzy there, Denise.
I know. What's
Are you feeling on? Okay?
It's the heat.
Oh, is that what it is?
Global boiling.
It's a global warming.
It's global.
Nah, you know what
it's
it
boiling
is.
Boiling now. It's boiling now.
Look, we gotta call it what it is. Denise is not in focus tonight. She's just not focused.
I'm literally not in focus.
It's
oh my star.
I've been there.
She's not focused, man.
I'm not focused, man.
Hey, right. Barbie, that Barbie movie is destroying this country.
Damn you!
We're gonna let Denise. Since she's the only one who saw the Barbie movie out of all four of us, we're gonna give her a minute to talk about that. But before I jump into that, so even though the writer's strike and the SAG strike are alive and well, thanks mostly to corporate greed, let's just call it what it is.
Mm-hmm.
even though I should be careful since I technically work for Disney, but but it is what it is, folks. It really. And I don't think I can get in trouble for that, or can I? I don't know. I guess we'll find out. But anyway, I guess my whole point is that even though there is a strike and that it's kind of hurting people's lives, both SAG and the WGA have said they are not encouraging people to cancel their streaming services. And the reasoning being, because then the streaming services will then use that as justification, as further justification for the way that the writers and the actors are currently being treated. So it's literally a case of forgive me, but it seems like it's literally the case of SAG and the WGA having to be the bigger niggas.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the world we live in, folks. An executive can turn around and say, yeah, we're going to wait until the WGA members are losing their apartments and their mortgages. But, you know, the actual standing up for the issue is outside of Fran Drescher, who did make a great impassioned speech after what I thought was going to start looking like capitulation to some degree. She stood up. She's like, all right, look. And she called out Bob Iger and did her thing. And she went in.
Yeah, she went ham.
But then here's the bad part. The bad part is no one is at the table right now.
Yeah.
So, and that not only affects the writers, the actors, the viewing public. It affects people like myself.
Right. The crews, the production crews.
Yes.
Yeah.
Everyone
behind the scenes.
Severely affects that. I'm in the DGA. We penned our contract. And some people, you know, everybody has different feelings about different things. But, you know, the AI thing doesn't affect the Directors Guild so much. So they kind of walk past that. But when you're an actor and they're talking about, we're just going to pay you for one day.
Yeah.
And, just going to pay you for one day and then we can use your image in perpetuity. And you got guys like Tom Hanks sitting around talking about, hey, wait, so when I'm long gone and dead and you guys are shooting Forrest Gump 13, where does that money go?
Right.
Because they're literally not even trying to fuck with the estate of said actor.
Yeah.
When you have, and then if you think about it like this, then you have situations where you may have a primary actor and like a dozen extras.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if you eliminate the need for extras, you also eliminate the need for makeup and wardrobe people.
Yeah.
You know, you're doing all these things that's basically at the end of the day, you're taking food out of people's mouths. And then you're surprised that they're protesting.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where we are with that.
You're affecting the actors too. I read an article about Keanu Reeves who had to sue someone because they wanted to digitally include like tears, making him cry, but he didn't cry on set. So you're still altering his performance against his wishes. Like, that's not cool, man.
No, not at all. Mm-mm.
I think the scariest part about this is that didn't Black Mirror just do a whole damn
Yes.
That's the scary like they did an entire Joan is awful. Episode
Joan is awful.
About that, about what we're dealing with right now and how, you know, hey, we just use your image. You know, I mean, they did it for Rogue One.
Yeah.
They brought Moff Tarkin back and Leia. So it's
Disney was playing around with this for a minute now. Then
that's true.
To be honest, I saw this report on YouTube in India. They did a test run with an AI broadcaster. And they had her, and it was a woman, and they had her with two different outfits on talking about the news, and I couldn't tell the difference.
Oh no!
This is in India.
No.
And it's broadcasting, and he was talking about, you know, it'd be great innovation. We can just, you know, it'll be, she'll be like, she's a real person. She'll be a great part of the team. Mm-hmm. She can bring in, you know, talk about certain news topics and allow the broadcasters to deal with their own stories with more focus and blah, blah, blah. And I was like,
oh no,
you ain't fooling it's nobody.
BS.
I mean, it's like, they're more angry that we're not believing the bullshit. That's pretty much what I feel. Like, oh, wait, you don't believe my bullshit? How dare you?
The road to hell is paved with good intention.
Yeah. But is that even good intentions?
It's not.
No.
But is that even good intentions?
Because, you know what?
No.
I mean, whoever designed the idea, I'll put it this way. If you go back to Rogue One, I don't think the idea of bringing Moff Tarkin back was because, oh, you know, we're trying to skirt the system. I think somebody really was like, I want to include this character in this story. And so let's do that. You know, that's what I mean by the road to hell. I don't think it was designed to say, you know, we're trying to replace someone. But now we're at a point where it's
The bean counter said, I thought Peter Cushing was dead. No.
Well, the thing is,
what we did was
because they had to pay the actor whose face they put over that.
Yes.
So I mean, in that regards, we know the man has passed. So we're gonna have to pay the person that's standing.
Well, you pay the estate. Yes.
Yes. So, but
not just the estate, but the talent.
But the actual
the stand.
Yeah.
So, but now it's the situation of. Someone in there was like, you know what? We could actually continue to do this and not have to pay people to do. And it only took a, like you were about to say, Stephen, it only took a bean counter to say, you know, we could save a whole lot of money if we did X, Y, and Z. And you go, you know what? You're right. And then, I mean, what's to stop you from... I mean, what's the stop? Like, after seeing the Dial of Destiny, what's to stop them from now doing a whole slew of Indiana Jones prequels?
Oof.
Oh, dear God.
Without Harrison Ford.
Right.
I just thought about something. We can actually blame probably Lord of the Rings for this. Because all that, they didn't use any extras in any of those battle scenes, those are all computer generated.
Soldiers
and bodies. But so were the So was the audience in Gladiator. Much of Gladiator was all digital background. We're all digital.
You're right.
Yeah. You know, wow. As opposed to Ben-Hur, when they shot Ben-Hur, and they literally was like, we have a commissary with over 1,000 extras.
Right.
It was, you know, when Jesus started walking, there were people on the mount when he was up there. Right. This was not like a digital.
I'll throw in another example, a little obscure. Toshiro Mifune's, Akira Kurosawa's Ron. The battle scenes in that movie, in case you've never saw it, you had these, you had separate full-blown armies, people on horseback. Like, yeah. I can't even imagine what that set fucking smelled like. Because they had horses. And they were, I'm telling you, that guy was fucking amazing. And Ron, when you see it, because basically, for those of you who don't know, Ron is sort of it's a version of King Lear, but set in feudal Japan.
Yeah.
And it's all these different armies and all these different flags.
Beautiful
and
they movie.
Are fighting it out. And
real people, real extras.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Real extras.
Bananas.
Wow.
And when you watch and when you think of it from a production standpoint, you're like, how the, like the budget now to pull that off.
Oof.
Yeah.
Insane. Insane. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure, you know, it's Japan. It's a couple of decades ago. You know, people were probably making peanuts, whatever, you know. But at the same time, just the spectacle of the movie. And it's like, and that's something, unfortunately, that's something we'll never see again. It looks like.
They don't want to spend the money to do it, and it's worth it. To me, it's to enjoy. I mean, I can tell when it's like, I know there's this fine line where, you know, you can't tell. You know, it like the opening sequence to Fellowship of the Rings, the Battle of Mount Doom. Mm-hmm. It's amazing to see on a big screen. Mm-hmm. But could you, I mean, but the battle for Gondor, like all of them cats were real. Like they had, I think for exception of the really, really ones that were really in the very way
far
back,
away. Yeah,
far away,
CGI.
They literally put out a call and asked anybody who owned a horse to show up and be in this scene. I mean,
that's cool.
And
yeah,
you know, it's just the amount. I mean, Jesus, it's a drop in the bucket.
Yeah,
I mean, you really don't want to pay people for their talent.
They'd rather have another yacht, Mark. They need another yacht.
Yeah.
And you know, it occurred to me today. I don't ever want to hear somebody ever say the words, "Well, being a writer is not a real job." Really? Because you know how many times we've heard that in our lives where it's like, what do you want to be? A writer. Oh, that's not a real job.
Get a real job.
Really? Yeah. Get a real job. Get one that pays. Well, they don't want to pay us.
Right.
For some reason, if it was a job that didn't get paid, I thought about this also. Do you guys remember when Friends was at the height of its popularity?
I know where you're going with this.
The actors bargained to get paid $1 million an episode. What did the writers get?
Good
because
question.
because as much as people talk about how funny that show was, somebody had to write it. Those jokes, those actors didn't create, and I'm not taking anything away from them. I'm not arguing against that they didn't deserve what they went in there for.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, we didn't hear the writers go, oh hell, if they're getting $1 million an episode, we're the ones writing this. What do you get? I would have loved to know what those writers got for that amount of work for per episode to write those, because the jokes didn't write themselves.
So and to that point, yeah, you're right. the writers didn't have the witherall, I don't think, first of all. And I think a large part of that also has to do with the fact that And so the way I look at it is the writers for that show are probably being fed the same bullshit that they're kind of being fed now. It's like, well, you're lucky to just be on this network, this, and this. Now, the fucking other side of that is, all right, so Friends finally goes away. Every last one of those six people, that little minority, they go on to further movie, sitcom, whatever, fame. Mm-hmm. There's not a single one of them that didn't at least do two more heavy projects that got them all kinds of money based on that.
Yeah.
What happens to the writers from Friends? Some of them, I'm sure, go land in other places.
Mm-hmm.
But much like crew members, some people do well in the reshuffle of the reality. And then other people, they're back on the couch.
Right. Waiting for the next gig.
Waiting for, right.
Yep.
Filing for unemployment and praying for the best. And nobody talks about that because the general perception, and I get this sometimes, you know, it's like, ah, please, you're loaded. I'm not fucking loaded. I'm very far from fucking loaded.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I get loaded.
but to your point, Stephen, I brought this up to someone on Facebook where they were complaining about just what you were saying. The sad part is that the people that are seen mm-hmm. by the majority of people is that 1% of actors who get like Tom Cruise and mm-hmm. and Keanu Reeves, these guys that get, you know, oh, he got $40 million to do a picture. So all of a sudden it's this assumption because those are the only people they see and get talked about.
Yeah.
Nobody talks about. I always think about how I know Steve Buscemi when he landed Boardwalk Empire was kissing the ground. Because mm-hmm. he'd been working as a character actor for years and finally got a leading man role.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, probably when he signed that thing was probably the average of what his SAG contract would get him.
Yeah,
but they don't. But that's the thing. It's the people that are put out front. It's and I'll go to this. J.K. Rowling,
mm-hmm.
Stephen King.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dan Brown, all of the famous A-list authors.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing everybody's like, oh, man, you're a writer? Oh, you must be making... Yeah, I haven't seen that kind of money. We had a... JK lives in a castle. My home is my castle.
My man, I tell people all the time, Anne Rice got biblical king money.
Yeah.
Edgar Allan Poe died broke on a park bench.
Bitch.
I'm just trying to land somewhere in the middle of that.
Yeah.
I don't want to be one. I don't think I'm going to get to the other. No, that would be nice.
We're working on it.
I'm just trying to get somewhere in the middle. That's what I tell people all the time.
You start telling them, I don't live in New York. I survive New York.
You know? And that's the other thing.
Yeah.
That's a word, Kirk. Yes, that is the other thing. That is the other thing. My ass would be in Nebraska right now if I knew this shit was going to be this fucking difficult. I don't know what I'd be doing in Nebraska, but
You'd still be writing. It's in your soul.
That's fair. That's very fair.
That one season where the crops don't come in, we're going to be upset.
And then there's that. And then we got Steve gonna call us over.
Steve going to call us over. And we all four of us going to be standing by the field like this. Man, they did say it's going to be a hot one this summer. Didn't they? What you want to do, Steve? Well, I seen a family of raccoon down there, by the way.
We have to come up with some shotgun, AI Steve. Corn.
Right. Oh, my stars.
Look at my shotgun, Steve.
Some AR broccoli.
Right.
A bitch. Hey,
they're already working on the chicken.
You don't mind skinning a raccoon tonight, do you? Because we ain't got nothing to eat.
I'm going to have some dirt soup. That's what I'm going to have.
Right? Oh, the only reason why we buy gas is because the toilet's flooded.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my stars.
And that's Nebraska.
And that's Nebraska, ladies and gentlemen.
That's a Nebraska for a writer.
On the next episode of Niggas Living in Nebraska.
We mad it's hot, but we thankful it ain't snowing no more.
Oh my God. I know. Snow. Let's open a ski resort. What? Yeah.
Episode 233. Not shucking and jiving. Because we ain't got no corn to shuck. It's hanging. Right.
Episode 755. The grass looked too damn green for the winter.
Be walking around. The grass is too damn green.
And why is this guy so blue?
Right. Oh shit. We just we hit like a whole bunch. Global warming. Global warming. Yep. People ain't getting paid. Inflation. Yeah. It's a great year, ladies and gentlemen.
Why is this air so fresh? Because we in Nebraska, nigga.
Nebraska. all the support. All the support and to WGA and
yes.
Absolutely. All our support. Absolutely.
Get your contracts. Please. Yeah. You deserve
Because ultimately, I feel like that somehow, however this finally fucking flushes out, it's going to have an effect on all four of us someday. Mm-hmm. And just all four of us, but pretty much everybody.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
if you have any writer friends, go hug a writer today. Go hug your writer.
I mean, I don't know about y'all. But
I would suggest some other shit if you find them attractive. But anyway,
I'm going to write for Broadway.
Okay. Well,
wait, in Brooklyn?
Aren't they supposed to be striking too, though?
No, in Brooklyn? They are still striking. Yeah, they are.
They are. And I think Mark knew that.
Mark been down here, by the way, over
our
Halsey. That's what he's talking about.
I'm gonna be off.
What you gonna be? You gonna be a restoration on Fulton Street? Is that where you gonna be?
Mark is writing stories for burlesque shows now.
I built before a stage in my house.
There's a line you have to hit.
I built a stage in my house.
Well, that would be cheaper than the last time we put on one of your things. Paying these people all this money, trying to beg everybody to come see the show and whatnot. Oh, Lord.
Still a great show.
Oh, my stars.
Those were good days. Anyway.
We're talking like we dying tomorrow. Those are great days. Yeah, well, them days was, man, long gone, baby.
Spiritually, who knows? So speaking of one of these companies that won't give these people their money, Netflix. Actually, they had two, count them two, at least two, shows that we all managed to see that were very, very much in our wheelhouse. One, The Blackening.
Yeah.
And then there's they cloned Tyrone. I personally enjoyed them both, but had mixed feelings. But since everybody else, I think, kind of falls in the same category, I'm gonna throw it to Kirk real quick. You can, and Kirk, you got the choice. You can either do Blackening or They Clone Tyrone.
I recently saw They Clone Tyrone. And like, I was surprised on that they went that far. That it went kind of dark like that. It actually surprised me. I think Mark said it, had perfectly said it. It's like an episode of Black Mirror.
right? It was so like it started off kind of dark already. And Jamie Foxx's character is slick was hilarious.
Yes.
Right. And I thought it was going that way between him and Tiona Paris, that chemistry they had, that moment, I thought it was gonna go to there. Because John Boyega's character is fucking grim as fuck. But it went someplace else. I was like, I wasn't sure if it was like an allegory, a satire, a parody of old 70 movies.
Right.
Blaxploitation flicks. But when it went to when it got into the sci-fi meat of it all, that did freak me out. I was like, holy shit. And they acted their asses off in that scene.
They did.
When they saw their clone, like, spoilers alert, when they saw their clones, man, that was something else. But the ending was I liked the ending. It was more upbeat than I thought it was gonna be. So I enjoyed it. I part of me though feels like they should have did what Quill was telling Groot to do in Guardians of the Galaxy. Just kill them all. That's my feeling for all those scientists and people. Yeah, we only have jobs. We only have, like, motherfucker, you killing people, man. You fuck. Right. You gotta go. I'm sorry. You gotta go. But I did enjoy it. I did enjoy it. I can't think of anything else really that it reminds me of in terms of that movie, another movie or concept at least, especially for Black film.
Right.
Especially for a majority Black production talent. Surprised the shit out of me, Kiefer Sutherland was up in that.
He was
good.
Yeah, that was an interesting secret they kept.
I did like him.
I did like
him in that.
Oh, he was
for
perfect.
Sure. Yeah,
for what was needed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what else to say, man. I did enjoy it.
Yeah.
Part of me did sit down after a while and I had to think about it for a while. I was like, wow.
Yeah, sure.
Of course.
Wow.
Like, wow.
I mean, to your point, Kirk, you know, because as you were saying, is it an allegory? Is it an analogy? Is it like, I think it was all that shit. All of that shit occupying the same space, which is a rare and beautiful thing in storytelling, I want to say. And to your earlier point, it's grim and disturbing. John Boyega, like, he was beyond brilliant. In this. I mean, they all were. They absolutely all were.
Yeah.
It's almost disturbing how once the full breath of the premise unfolds, how naturally it's like, oh, okay. Like, there's no moment where only speaking for myself, of course, there's no moment where I was taken out of it on some, fuck, that's not.
Right.
No.
That's the sad part. Right. That's the disturbing part.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I get it now. Like, you literally just slide right into it.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're on a fucking water slide. It's like you just go right in. It's like it's done.
Yeah.
I don't know. Denise, what do you got?
I really, really liked it. I think I liked it more than The Blackening, for sure. It was more enjoyable to me. It also made me think of, like, Westworld and The Matrix also. Like, those different, like, realities and stuff. Mm-hmm. I really, really enjoyed it. I also liked how, for me personally, it's like, okay, are you living your best life? Is this what you're doing? Because obviously there's going to be another level somewhere. Like, do your best, live your best life, and don't eat all that chicken, right? Like,
the chicken scene.
Yeah, it's a chicken scene.
Right.
That was brilliant, though. It was absolutely brilliant.
Wait, real quick. Yeah. I mean, it was kind of refreshing to see the Black characters actually in moments of just brilliance.
Yeah.
Like, sick Charles going, wait, don't eat that chicken. Like, I never seen him laugh before so hard.
Yeah.
You know, him figuring shit out and Tiana characters actually having more to her than just being a prostitute.
Yeah.
Gets so much more of a depth and layer to her.
Yeah.
And,
I really liked
and
it.
And Boyega's, doing a better angry Black man than
than Mario Van Peebles did in that Western he was in.
That would be Posse, I believe.
Yes, is what
you are.
Yeah.
You are regaling.
I'll just say.
Oh, my goodness. The Black Enemy was good. It was entertaining, but it didn't hold my attention as much. I was like, I don't know if maybe I was too tired the first time I watched it. I got to watch it again. Like, some stuff was like, yeah, that's funny. That's funny. And the overall, like, the story arc at the end, I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. That's kind of clever. But it was like, whoa, this is so great. I was like, it's all right.
It was Blackening was cool. It definitely wasn't as deep or as thought-provoking as They Clone Tyrone.
Right. And what I don't like
is almost apples and oranges.
When I Googled it, if you Googled the Blackening, they don't show any of the Black characters. They show the two white guys. Google it. I swear you. Google it. You will see the credits for the two white guys. You won't see the Black people.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Wow. I was like, yeah.
Mark, you got thoughts?
So I'm going to start. I'll go back to the Blackening first, because that the overall reasoning behind why things were happening. Unfortunately for me, I related way too much to that, which is the reason why I do not play Spades at all. You will never get me to play that game ever, because I had an incident where people got so, like, literally threw the table over angry because I beat them, but they were mad at the way I did it and went into this hole. And I was like, you know what? I'm not doing this again. You know,
I need to know how you did it.
How'd you beat them? Oh, no, they accused me of not calling all my books.
That bullshit.
And the thing was, I was like, I'm not calling what I don't have. Like, I got a partner. Yeah. So my partner, like, I didn't do that. And so it turned into this whole, well, no, you had like six extra books or three extra books. You were supposed to call that. And I was like, call what? I'm like, how was I supposed to know? Like, I don't, like, there's too much to this guessing game that goes on in that. And it only, and, you know, of course, the people, when they're winning, oh, you know, and I'm sitting there like, yeah, you never called that. Nah, man, you can't be calling that on me now. Oof. Yeah, when you lose at damn near, when you lost to me by almost 300 points, then it became a thing. And I was like, I'm done. Right. Thing was, when the revelation came out, I couldn't even laugh at it. Because it wasn't funny to me. I was like, no, because I know how people behave just based off of that. I mean, the movie itself was, and I said, I had to watch it a second time with someone because watching it, when you're watching it with someone, then it was funny. Then I started catching, like, the cat that got shot twice with the crossbow.
With the crossbow?
and stuff like, yo, what? And in the same spot, dude. I mean, you know, there were just these little nuances that I thought, you know, it was cool. I just couldn't, you know, there was some plot holes in there that I just couldn't wrap my head around. And particularly the killer. Like, I was like, huh? How did you? All right, you know what? No, let it go.
Well, I'll watch it again. Yeah.
They Clone Tyrone depressed me.
Oh no.
And I'm not, it's a good movie. I'm not, but there's something about the idea of not being able to get out.
Yep.
That makes it sad. And then when you see, it's not even so much the fact that they were cloned, it's who they cloned.
Yes.
And you start to hear about this. I remember this line from Public Enemy, where he goes, one side of the street is the liquor store, the other side is the church. both of us keeping us poor, keeping us down. And I'm thinking about that whole, I was like, y'all put the place in a church.
Yeah.
Like the strategic places and the things that they did.
Yeah.
This made me feel like, my God, we have heard this, like the hair care products.
Yeah.
The chicken scene. I started to laugh until Jamie's face changed. And then I was like, oh Christ. Like, it's like, it's not even it. And so I had said after I watched it, I was like, I wanted to laugh. There were moments in that movie I wanted to, that I should have been on the floor screaming. But it was almost like the whole tone and what it was about. And the fact that the sister tried to leave.
Yeah.
That's when that I think that was the part that got me. I was like, oh, that's why she can't get out of there. They're finding ways to prevent her from getting out of her situation. Like, she's like, I don't want to be here no more. I say to mama, I'ma leave. And then they started setting up roadblocks. It's like, no, you play a particular role. And I think that was it. When they were like, you play a particular role in this society. And then it's almost like, so what are you saying? We can't evolve from that. We can't be better. And I had to think about when Kirk said to me, he said in a text, he said, the ending gave him hope. And I had to sit back and revisit the ending. And I was like, you know what? I agree.
Oh.
I agree. Yeah, that, you know, it's rare me and Kirk agree on anything.
I know.
Talk about it. Broken clock is right twice a day.
I need to play the lottery. Shoot.
But when I, in hindsight, I was like, no, I could see the hope in the story. But it was nerve-wracking. It was one of those movies where, yeah, I had to stop and think after a while and was like, huh, that puts a lot in. And then Kiefer showing up. I'm like, this is the second time you done did this. First time was in, what was the one? The John Grisham movie, A Time to Kill.
Right.
Where you were playing a Klansman. Now he can come again. I'm like, come on, Kiefer. I rooted for you in 24. You can't keep doing it.
Guest starring to Kiefer Sutherland.
If it makes you feel any better, Kiefer Sutherland is actually mad short.
Is he?
He's so short. Wow. He's very short.
I had no idea.
I want to say, you might be taller than Kiefer Sutherland. I'm just going to put it out there. He was at Fuse once, and I was like, yeah, that's Kiefer Sutherland's face. Okay. Hello, Mr. Sutherland. How are you? I'm just going to get you mic'd up, and
I think this.
Definitely so tall.
Did you bend over? Were you like,
Kiefer? It wasn't that bad.
But, I will say there was one other time I did laugh. Was Jamie Foxx in the back of the van.
Yeah.
Oh.
And when they caught up to him, when he was in the back, like, that actually made me laugh. But it's a great film. It's a really good, and it makes you think.
It's a thought provoker, 100%.
And I can't be mad at it. I wasn't disappointed. I think I went in thinking it was going to be something else, and then I got that, and I was
me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And it really got me. I love that ending with the surprise, like who Tyrone really is.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Call Tyrone. Okay. Actually, real quick, the blackening.
Mm-hmm.
So I was talking to a friend of mine. I went to see a couple of people. And, you know, we talked about how there are actually very few deaths in that movie.
Yeah.
And I said it might have something to do with just an awareness of the director and the writer, because the people who died, actually, the black people who died you or didn't see
probably one. Most expensive actors.
Well, yeah, but you didn't see the woman get killed, and right. they showed you a really quick flash of the brother who died post death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I thought about how many times in real life we see black bodies on the screen dead. And I thought possibly that, you know, the director and writer were very much aware of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's why, because okay. I was expecting half that cast to be dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
But they didn't. And I wonder if that has a lot to do with it.
I think so. I watched The Angry Black Girl and Her Monster, and they do something similar without any spoilers. When you watch it, you'll see. You'll be like, oh, wow. Yeah, that they're sensitive to that. Great thing.
Right. The sensitivity to black death on camera. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think is something to be aware of.
Yeah.
Because even for Tyrone, even for they call Tyrone,
mm-hmm.
you'll notice something interesting about that as well.
Yeah.
Who dies, who doesn't.
Yeah. Totally agree.
Yeah.
So,
that's just a thought.
Well, for me in the blackening, just piggybacking off of something Mark said, the whole thing with spades. And I have not had an overly traumatic experience playing spades, but one thing I will say back when I did play was that motherfuckers took that shit way too seriously.
Oh, yeah.
Way too, like, there's no money involved. This is no one's job. Mm-hmm. Like, no one's going to die. Why are you so amped up over a game? Like, and it's almost like, and shout out to Jermaine Fowler, who is a stand-up comedian who I worked with way back in the day. Nice guy, real good dude. Which when I saw him, I was like, oh, that's it. That I was very happy to see him doing his thing in this film. But He was literally the personification of what we do to each other for absolutely no fucking reason. This overly hypercritical, like, scene we create in our personal lives sometimes. Black karaoke. That's another one. That's another one. You'll be out at black karaoke and you'll hear stuff like, oh no, that bitch ain't singing my song. First of all, it's not your song.
It's not yours.
You might have sang it last week, but it's not your song.
Right.
You didn't write it. You don't own the rights to it. Nothing. And ultimately, you know, and when the Japanese first invented karaoke.
Right.
There was none of this bullshit about having to basically go pitch perfect through a song when you are not a professional trained singer.
Mm-hmm.
There was none of that. That only happens in black karaoke. I'll never forget one night I'm in, and this was back when they had an Applebee's here in Brooklyn, Denise, on the corner of DeKalb and Flatbush, right? Okay. And I wasn't participating in any other thing outside of the drinking. And I'm at the bar and I'm having, you know, because Applebee's has those perfect margaritas. And I was drinking one of those. And someone's up there singing. And I remember one of the instruments being a little more out of the mix than the other instruments. So being a TV person, I'm like, well, what the hell is going on? And I turn around. And there's a woman and she's singing, but next to her is a guy. So you've got the karaoke track, you've got this lady singing, and you've got a guy next to her with a tenor fucking saxophone playing an accompaniment to a karaoke in an Applebee's.
Nice.
In an Applebee's.
Nice.
And the thing is, wow. I've been to these things. I'm very good friends with a karaoke DJ by the name of Frank Smooth. And I always end up in these conversations and I end up having to tell these people, you know, Clive Davis is not coming to fucking sign any of you, right? What are you talking about?
Right.
And it's just like it's bananas. But sometimes
go ahead.
Go ahead,
Kurt.
No, go ahead. No, you go ahead, Mark. Go ahead, Mark.
No, but you know what the other thing is? There's certain things you can't sing. I would love to go to karaoke and bust out Enter Sandman. I can't do that.
Not in black karaoke.
And a black karaoke.
Black karaoke.
Yeah. Not in black karaoke. You ain't doing that shit.
That's why the night, you remember the night the dude sang the song from the end of the movie, from the end of the FX movie? Illusion? Oh, and yes. You and I was sitting there like,
no, wow. He's not. Right.
And meanwhile, everybody else is drinking. They ain't paying him any attention.
Wow.
He is in his zone. And I think he was shocked when Steven and I were like, man, that was really good. That was I love that song.
Yeah, you had to give him his
props. Yeah.
Oh, but wow.
You can't just go. I can't go in there and bust out Man in the Box by Alice in Chains because
but wait, you gotta know your audience. You can't do that. Like
that's, you know what? How many times have I gone to black karaoke and put in a song and then look out and be like, I'm gonna change this. All right, so
meanwhile,
I sang Lust for Life, Iggy Pop.
Where did you do that?
In North Carolina. At a bar in North Carolina. I let that shit go.
How did that?
I said, fuck that.
Wow.
Please tell us how that went.
Man. Well, because it was a mixed crowd.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Mixed crowd. And I let that shit go. And both white and black ain't know what the fuck I was singing.
Wow.
White
wow.
And black.
Yeah, because you was
nobody. I was about to say, you picked the wrong state for that bullshit.
Right.
You really did. You really did.
They didn't know Kirk was coming. They didn't know he was ready.
Now, wait, Las Vegas, have a rock and roll karaoke with a live band, and they have like a whole playlist.
Oh.
You could definitely do that. Yes.
Yeah.
It's very cool.
All right. That's good to know.
Yeah.
I gotta speak up for the space players. I gotta speak up for the space players real quick, because I'm a space player. Hey, look. All right, so we're playing spades real quick. Playing spades at the office, at the job, in the studio between shows. Oof. We ain't taking it seriously.
Should we be admitting to this on air?
Yeah, I don't. It's I don't work for.
All right, fine. Who gives a fuck? All right, okay.
but there's so we ain't playing for money. Nothing. You know, it's just a nice friendly game. This is what the problem was. We're not. So we're taking scores, but we're not. We weren't penalizing for anybody who reneged. Right.
Even I got to call bullshit on that. But all right, go ahead.
We were going. And this dude, he reneged. And I remember it because he did twice. And he won. He won the game because of that.
Oh.
And I tell you how angry I was. And he was a stage manager, too. I looked at him. I he was a stage manager. I said,
hey, don't lump me in that. I
bitch
don't.
Ass motherfucker. I slammed the table. I did everything. Because I looked at him. I looked him in his face like, you knew what the fuck you were doing. Oof. You knew where the score was. And you did that shit anyway. You broke the table of trust.
I have questions.
Fuck that. You broke the table of trust.
I have questions.
Because I was looking at it like, how did they win? You reneged like twice.
So my first question. Y'all actually had enough black people at ESPN to play a game of spades? Like, was Stephen A. Smith playing with y'all?
No, we don't. That's why I was the only black person on the table.
See, this See.
Two Puerto Rican guys, and one white cat, and it was a white cat who reneged.
See, that's your own damn fault.
So, hold on.
That's
no,
your own damn
no,
fault.
No. Here's the question.
Julian had to
here's
hold me back.
Here's the question.
Yeah.
Did you explain
yes.
to him?
Oh, dude, no.
Did you show him?
Bro, no. This wasn't the first game you played with him. He's been like there was a point like for a whole month we playing spades after first take. We have like an hour and change between first take and the next show.
Mm.
We playing. He knows.
Okay, so I'm when just I, making so when sure I got because lit, part of the problem in the movie was nobody would teach this guy. How to, you on your own. You have to figure
which
out.
Which I thought was wrong. Which I thought was wrong. I thought was wrong.
And you know what?
That was wrong.
You know what? That's I'm put it in order. Spades, Uno, Monopoly. The three games you don't play with black people. Spades, Uno, and Monopoly.
Don't forget
Domino. Now, here's the thing with dominoes. Here's the thing. You got to be careful with dominoes. It's not the black folks you got to worry about. It's the Hispanic people.
Oh, shit. Oh,
you play Lord. Spades. You play dominoes with some Hispanic folks. Because these dudes play all day. They will literally.
What part of Florida did you go visit, man?
Mess that up. You're out of the game or order. There's no a.
Oh my God.
What are you doing? You know, it's like, bah. And then you mess that up. They start dealing to each other. You like, can I play? No. You're good. We're gonna let you walk away. You know. But you're right, Steven. People get there's no my life's not on the line. Mm-mm. I'm not playing against the devil.
No.
But for some reason, people walk in angry at the beginning of a spades game.
Yeah. You black in America. You damn angry. It's a circle of trust. It's a circle of trust.
Oh, my stars. A circle
of trust.
Oh, my God. I can't.
When I play dominoes, I shit you not. When I play dominoes, every time I win, I make sure I slam the table so
I know you do.
Hell yeah, domino.
Yeah, imagine my shock and amazement. Oh my God.
I need somebody to answer this question. Why the sister kept going, stop it. Every time the killer would show up, she'd be like, no, don't you do that. Stop it. Stop it. She was swimming back to shore. She's like, yes.
He was shooting a crossbow and kept missing her.
She was like, why you stop it? No, like,
I guess we're gonna call that a coping mechanism.
That is the blackest thriller you'll ever see next to Get Out.
Pretty much.
Blackening is the blackest thriller you'll ever see next to Get Out.
Pretty I'll much.
Oh, I love the costume change at the end. The post-credit costume change.
Yes.
Just for a minute, I was like, wait, he wasn't wet. How did she?
Yes. That's so hilarious. We're going to call the cops now. We call the fire department.
Right.
Yo!
Which on the surface was so brilliant. And then the finale of that. Genius. So good. Before we go, so I guess we're going to try to talk about Barbie next week. Denise already saw it.
Yes.
Which is the only reason we're even considering it, because she actually came back and reported that it was good and it's not for kids.
It is not for kids.
But the fact that Denise says it's good means we're probably going to discuss it next week.
Yes.
Please, I'm really curious to see what you're going to think about it.
Wait.
Really curious.
Should we also probably discuss The Little Mermaid?
We can.
We could.
I know why Kirk wants to do that. It's justifiable.
See The Little Mermaid?
I didn't
see it. But sure, Kirk.
It's available on Amazon. I didn't see it either.
I haven't seen it yet either, but I'll watch it. I'll see it for... I'm not into mermaids. So
my sister's a professional mermaid.
Exactly.
And then there's that.
Yeah.
So,
so yeah, you know, more a sirens ladies. Person. Thank you.
I'm more a Charybdis than Scylla kind of guy.
All right, that's fair.
Oh my goodness,
Mark? Yeah, no, nobody. Any really? The Odyssey? Charybdis?
Okay, I don't want to deal with either one of them.
We understood, Kirk. It just it's a little frightening, Kirk.
In the words of Belloc, I'm very happy right here. Yes. We're all happy right here.
All right, folks, that's our show. We hope you enjoyed it. We hope you appreciate it. Hope you got a little fresh perspective on a couple of things out of us tonight. Tune in next week. for more hilarity and nonsense, for Mark Abbott, Kirk Johnson, and the vivacious Denise Tapscott, I'm Steve Van Patten, and this is the end of this particular episode of Beef, Wine, and Shenanigans. Farewell and adieu to you, fair Spanish ladies.